Oh, well, hello, the internet, and welcome to season 20, episode 3 of The Daily Zeitgeist. Yeah. Thank you so much. Who did that? Who hit me with that? Oh, Daniel, caught me slipping. Yes, it is February 28th, 2018. My name is not Jack O'Brien. It is actually Miles Gray, a.k.a. when the Jack's away, the Miles will gray or play, however you want to do that. Many of you hit me with that a.k.a., and we're going to leave that in because I'm live streaming now, and this is how it goes. Look, I'm also joined now by a very special guest host. One of our favorites, one of your favorites, the man, the myth, the legend, comedian, author, expert on the presidents, so many different things, you know, the subject of investigations from the Secret Service as well, Mr. Daniel O'Brien.
That's right, Daniel O'Brien, a.k.a. Dan Yellow. Is it me you're looking for?
Ooh. Yo, you got some good. Who gave you that a.k.a.?
Wobblehead on Twitter.
You know what? I saw you tweet yesterday, like, looking for a.k.a.s. One of the more impressive ones to me was the person who did the bombs over Baghdad one. I was willing to, like, Daniel O'Brien.
Yeah.
Anyway, because that's my own thing, and I just shoehorned that in. And in our third seat, our Zeit guest, if you will, the wonderful, I guess, there's so many ways to describe you. You are a comedian. You are a writer, a director, just a general creative force to be reckoned with, and friend. Carmen, Angelica, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. And someone gave you an AKA.
They did?
It was no matter the weather, you come with the pleather.
I do.
Or something, because you are wearing a wonderful a wonderful ensemble.
I felt like I wanted to really bring something to the table, and that was pleather. So I did. I brought my most pleather. But
there you go.
Just
pleather overalls?
Pleather overalls. Yeah. Something subtle. Something.
Yeah. To show that you are in touch with the working man.
Yeah.
As we said before. Guys, wow. It's so good to have you guys here. And many people are very excited to have y'all here. I want to know something, Carmen. What is something from your search history that lets people know sort of like what you're about, who you are?
I Googled specifically fun potatoes.
Fun potatoes.
Fun
okay.
potatoes. And I think
I think we can move on. I don't think
All right. Moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely one of those, I would say, late night lazy Googles where I was sitting and being like, I've been like using my potatoes in boring ways.
In boring ways, like just for eating?
Like specifically, like I'm like, I always make potatoes the same way. And like, what? But instead of being like, good recipes for potatoes.
You just said
I was
fun.
Like, fun potatoes. Because it was one of those lazy Google moments.
Yeah.
Do you recall anything that came up?
Well, I found out more than just eating ways of potatoes.
Okay. Oh.
But a lot of it was like weird, you know, like someone was like, fun science projects with potatoes. And it was like, you know, the make a light bulb light up with it.
Or do that bit. Was that Charlie Chaplin with the forks?
Yeah. And then, making it walk.
And then Abe Simpson did it. And then the people from the estate of Charlie Chaplin came and squished the potatoes. Wait, so how do you normally make them?
I feel like I do a real, like, either like a, I love mashed potatoes, but, you know, trying to be healthy. So a lot of times I just roast them and, like, it's like an olive oil with, like, some garlic, like, powder or salt or something. But I want to, like, paprika is so exciting. And,
right.
I want to do more with my potatoes.
I like to get the big ones and make really big-ass, like, potato skins with whatever I want to put in there. Like, broccoli and cheese if I want to pretend that I'm being healthy or something like that. Yeah.
You make potato skins?
Yeah, I haven't made potato skins ever.
Oh, really?
I've only bought them. I've never made them.
Oh, yeah. You make them yourself. You're in complete control of what goes in them.
I'd imagine one would be.
You know how cooking works.
You don't say. Suddenly someone comes in. He's like, you better put this rock in there. And you're like, okay. Carmen, what's something that's underrated?
Oh, man. Okay. So right now I just recently became obsessed with this Netflix show that I feel like I haven't heard people talking about, but I'd like to believe it's because it's underrated because I think it's amazing. It's called Travels with My Father.
Oh, yeah. With the English comedian.
Yes.
What's his name?
Jack Whitehallhead, right? Hallhead?
Whitehall.
But I just discovered him through that, which I'm sure everybody else knows about him. But I thought that show was incredible because not only was it a travel show, but it had comedy. And then there was like these sweet moments with the dad, but it was also very funny.
Now, is it good for people who have daddy issues? Because I can't watch This Is Us. Because I cry when the fucking music comes on. My girlfriend thinks something's wrong with it.
It's fucked up, that show. It's manipulative. It's a manipulative show. Especially with Sterling K. Brown's storyline with his dad trying to get... Anyway, we're not getting into that. How was that for you?
Like, I enjoyed it because he is like part of the whole bit, and I don't know if it's like a bit or if it feels real, but very funny. Is like he feels like he's always trying to impress his dad, and his dad is like a very like British like stiff upper lip like guy, and he doesn't travel. He's never really traveled, and he takes his dad like on a gap year with him, and gotcha. So he wants to do all of like the gap year things, which is like go to raves. They do it. They end up going to Thailand for the moon.
Like
the
moon parties
moon
or whatever?
Festival, yeah. And they end up, like, his dad, like, goes to a rave with him. And, like, it's just, like, really funny and like...
Is there an arc to their relationship? Are they trying to get to a certain place emotionally with the two of them?
I mean, he definitely is, like, I want to take my dad traveling with me and I want to, like, have, like, a close bonding moment.
Yeah,
and
right.
They, like, do. They, like, there's, like, a point where, like, he's playing soccer in front of his dad and he's, like, when he was little, he wasn't that good. But then he's playing with, like, a group of people and his dad is, like, you're doing pretty well. And it was like, actually, I was like, oh, like, he really likes his soccer. But it was like it was like really fun.
Was it Travels with My Father? Is that what it is?
Travels with My Father.
Yeah. Guys, check into that. Check
it out. I would like to second it. It's one of the funniest shows I've seen.
Who are
right?
you? Who is this
Thank
voice?
You.
And I just saying it, I was dying watching it at some points. Wow. Like his father and his relationship, it's such opposites that it's beautiful. And they're like just in like... Thailand and the father is so upset the whole time and it is so funny.
Wow.
It's really I think it's really fun. And then they also go in like history of like the locations that they're traveling to.
Right.
So I thought it was like a really cool and funny travel show, which
We'll have to get into that. Yeah. Carmen, on the other end of the spectrum, what is something that is fucking just overrated?
Okay, this is my unpopular opinion, and so it's unpopular. And I know
well, this
that.
Isn't unpops, so we should brand that as something different.
All right, it's not well regarded.
It's not an opinion that is not popular.
I actually think that TV shows about people doing comedy is really overrated. Just TV shows, movies, I think it's really overrated. And I'm coming from this as somebody who does comedy.
Oh my God,
right.
I'm getting so sick of seeing
the
like,
meta shows
like
about
the shows that are
the
like
struggle.
Oh, and then I did comedy and no one laughed or something. I'm like, I don't care. Like, tell me like about any other story. I don't want to hear about the comedian.
Particularly who? Let's call out names. What shows?
If you don't
want Crashing?
If you don't want to try Crashing, I can we'll do that.
I know, you know, Crashing is definitely one of the ones.
What about Marvelous Ms. Maisel?
That one is one that I actually like because it's historical. It's tough,
Interesting.
Though. It's
oh, okay.
Tough.
What's the one on Showtime? I'm Dying Up Here?
I'm Dying Up Here.
What about
I'm
that
dying
one?
Up
Isn't
here,
that historical,
I
too?
I can't with I'm Dying Up Here. Because to me, I feel like with the – here's the difference. I mean, Marvelous Miss Maisel is like an exception for me because it goes into like the history of like being a housewife in the 50s and how much – like how hard that was. But I didn't get that from I'm Dying Up Here.
Right.
It was all about the struggle of the stand-up. And also, they weren't doing great stand-up.
Right.
So it was like, oh, well, yeah, that's why nobody's laughing. That's why you're dying up there.
At least in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, the stand-up was good.
Yeah.
I really loved
that show. I loved it,
too. Crashing, I was really feeling season one. And then I started watching season two less and less. Like, I saw the first one, was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Then I tuned in this next week, and I was like, all right. And then the third week, I had it on and wasn't watching it. I was doing other shit. So that's when I knew.
I'm still watching it because I'm a completist and I started it. And I'm a big Pete Holmes stand-up fan. I like his stuff a whole lot. But that show, I watch every episode. And every once in a while, there'll be like a really cool moment.
Yeah.
But I still watch it and I, out loud in my apartment, am saying, why are we making this? Why are we doing this?
Right.
I don't – we know Pete Holmes ends up fine. It's another
right. I know where he is now.
Yeah,
and this story ends well for him. Yeah. He has an HBO show where he looks back at his whole life. But yeah, shout out to Scott Garrison who listens to the show, my homie. He's taken a few photos for Pete Holmes album covers. Just want to fit that in because he listens to the show.
I do think it's like there are some that are done well and there are aspects that are done well, but there are so many now that I'm just like, can we get on to other stories?
Yeah. What do you propose? So you want to just get rid of all shows that are sort of biographical or like the focus is about the struggle of a comedian?
I think
as
the
a
focus of a struggle of a comedian is getting a little old.
Getting old.
Yeah.
Like I know this means like I'm sure later in life I will never be able to write because somebody will take this clip and I will never be able to write a thing about my life. But
yeah, this hypocrite.
I know. But I think it's I think there was something to be said about, like, I'd love to hear other stories.
Yeah.
Especially as a comedian. Maybe it's just me being a comedian and being like, I don't need to hear this. I live this.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's tough because you always want to find out, like, I feel like where this comes from is the Judd Apatow influence of write what you know, like, tell the story that you know. Yeah. And so a lot of comedians have taken that to heart and, like, yeah, this is the life I know, so this is the thing that I'm going to do.
Right. We all get it. Y'all were broke boys at one point, and it's tough out there doing – we're going from mic to mic every day. Yeah.
But, like, surely you've done something else if you could tell that story instead.
Please call her Carmen, not Shirley. moving on. So let's get into the show. Also, thank you to everybody out there in the Zeit Gang that was hitting me with local stories, hitting us with local stories. It's very there are a lot of eye-opening things that I will have to take some time to digest, but I will cover maybe a couple on Friday just as an update for that. So, again, with format, you know what it is. We're just talking about whatever everybody's talking about, and we try and do it in a way that's intelligent and funny, I guess. So to kick the show off, we always like to ask our guests, Carmen, what is a myth that people believe, you know, in their heart of hearts that you just know is just some straight up bullshit?
Well, recently I'm starting to feel really strongly about the food pyramid, food plate, whatever, because I did a bunch of research on it. And the USDA was like a big influence on the original food pyramid, which had like all of the wheat at the bottom, and, like all of the grains at the bottom. And then like at the very top, it was like candy. Then they became a new food pyramid, which had all the little like strips of triangles.
Right.
And that also was inaccurate and very confusing for people. And then they now have the plate. And even now people are arguing against that because it has like... What is it? A quarter veggies, a quarter fruit, a quarter protein, and then a quarter wheat. And then in the corner is like a little dairy. And then that's it. And like they're actually fine. And like oil, I think, or something, fat is like, I don't know where fat is on that. But it's, to me, it feels like we keep finding different things out. Like now there are really good fats. Like we've always been taught bad, like fat is bad, and now like fat is good. And so like I would say like following any of like the food plate, food pyramid things is like a myth.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because we're also still teaching that in school.
I would just do this. Look at what the longest lifespan is for a given country and look at what they're eating.
Yeah.
And just copy that because they're probably eating well and they've probably found a good balance of proteins and wheats or glutens or whatever the fuck you want to call it. But yeah, because I think of my grandmother in Japan, she lived to be like 101 years old and her diet was like, it's like sort of a mostly like a pescatarian diet.
Yeah.
And with good fats and things like that. But it was never, they were never like, oh, but did you eat your corn today? Like,
was food pyramid specifically taught in either of your houses?
I remember in school food pyramid was taught.
I do too. Like they had it just like hung up on the wall, but I got home and there was no, we never discussed it. It was
just it was just a thing that was, they told you about, but like you'd go home and like, look, your parents are working. They're like, hey, eat this McDonald's. Or
yeah, right.
But we always had grains. I do remember like, and now like my parents are starting like not really have grains as much, which I remember we used to always have rice or like pasta because we're Italian.
Yeah.
There you go.
We had a lot of pasta. We were Italian. It's a family with three.
Did you say we were Italian?
We stopped.
Oh, okay. We're no longer identified. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a family with like three growing boys and two working parents. So it was, there was no pyramid that could be acknowledged.
It was like hive, like what can I make in volume?
It's chicken today, everyone. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, I've just actually been informed by our super producer, grandmaster of the boards, Nick Stumpf, that what I'm talking about does exist. It's called the Blue Zone Diet, where they do look at where people are living long and they're saying, eat that. Because I guess that makes sense, right? What we put in our body, it kind of determines where we end up. So thank you for that myth. The food pyramid is bullshit, right? Is that's what we're getting at?
I think
with
the food pyramid or whatever the new
food plate like, or whatever
thing,
yeah.
Because I think we keep fixing it and then finding out that like we did it wrong.
Yeah, all that shows you is who's contributing what money to lobbying. It's like, 25% is to the meat lobby and the other is to the fruits and vegetables. Anyway, but that's the pessimistic view. So guys, just eat like your grandparents did. And live as long as they did, unless they're in America, because that was a terrible diet. So let's move into the news. So Jared Kushner had a really bad day yesterday. His whole – basically, security clearance was kicked down from top secret to secret. Now, that might not seem important, but it is because when you have top secret, you are seeing like the most sensitive of information in terms of how we gather it and things like that. and just basically like shit you wouldn't want people outside of our government knowing.
Right.
And you know, and that's good because let's look at what his workload is, right? Because he's the smartest man that Donald Trump has ever met, he has the distinct honor of being in charge of improving relations with China, Japan, Mexico, solving the opioid crisis, working on government efficiency, infrastructure, trade, peace in the Middle East. I could go on.
No, I mean,
just like the little things on the table.
Yeah, just the shit that doesn't matter.
But it's insane that his status got downgraded because he solved everything on that list.
I know.
Home run after home run.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, opioids are out.
Yep.
Mexico is like, we're done sending our people across the border and we're done with these trade deficits. The government is working so efficiently. Mm-hmm. I think infrastructure is at all time high. I mean, guys, yeah, he's done it. Well, actually, no, that's bullshit because let's really think about this. So after Rob Porter, that whole Rob Porter scandal with one of the staffers at the White House basically abusing his wives and the FBI being like, this guy should not be anywhere near any sensitive information. The fallout from that has caused John Kelly to like tighten it up a little bit, although he has a bit of like a war going on with the Javanka arm of the White House. But he's basically like, yo, okay, now you can only look at like not the big boy stuff, but like the kind of big boy stuff.
I do. You say big boy and kind of big boy. I actually was surprised to learn how like inherently – caddy this the naming of things is, that it's literally secret and top secret. That's not like us coming to that, because it just feels like
and
very
pop secret,
very high school status where it's like, what's your thing say? Secret? No.
Oh, I'm top secret. Bye. Yeah.
You can't sit here.
Yeah. Can I see your badge? Oh, no. You don't get the hot goss.
I would love to see the notes that are being passed under the table at those
meetings. You know it's a bunch of fucking crazy texts with emojis. Like, you know they have an emoji for Trump. They have an emoji for, like, Javanka and them. Like, it's oh, man, I would love to see that.
And I want to see, like, everyone else's, like, Eric Trump's badge that is just like, oh, normal news. You only get normal news. Yeah, you don't even get secret. You just get, like, readily available public information.
It's just also very disturbing because, like, this article came out in the Washington Post that basically said that, like, other countries list knew that because he is in such a desperate need for money for that, like, billion-dollar building, 666 Fifth Avenue, I believe, in New York, that he's just underwater on, that his whole – like, he's very vulnerable because he's constantly looking for ways to get that funded. And it was, like – it was through intercepts – that like in wiretaps that they found out that like other governments are talking about like, yo, we can play this dude and get some shit out of him, or you know unwittingly get him to cooperate with whatever a given country's end game is, which is very bad in terms of just negotiating, right? If you go into a negotiation blind and not know, like, they're probably going to offer you this because that's because they want this or whatever the case may be. That's a very simplified version of it. But without this intelligence, I don't know how he'll effectively even be able to do anything. Not that he was, but he just shouldn't be in there, I think, is really what the point is when you look at all this. Because the White House and this whole entire administration is just filled with a bunch of homies who I guess Donald Trump's just like, yeah, do whatever you want, man. Like, you got to get your building funded. Like, do that however you want to. Which helps us go into this next thing about Ben Carson, because apparently this motherfucker, while he was busy trying to gut all these government programs from housing and urban development – you know, which are vital things, and like not evicting people from like Section 8 housing and shit like that, he basically ordered a $30,000 dining room set for his office at HUD. Now, I don't even know anybody with a $30,000 car. Okay. No. So a $30,000 dining set is fucking wild. I don't even know that there is such a thing as a $30,000 dining
set. $30,000 office dining set. This isn't even
office? His home.
Yes.
It's in his office at Housing and Urban Development.
I thought this was like maybe wedding china.
No, this is like when he does his like work lunch, he'll be like, all right, should we go eat on my fine Brazilian teak dining table, whatever the fuck it is. But I mean, like, you look at what they showed pictures of what it looks like now. Sure, it's a little Spartan, as they would say. Mm-hmm. It looks a little dated. But at the end of the day, like, you're not in the job to be, like, at the Ritz-Carlton. You're there to do a public good for people. And it's just very offensive because this follows the same pattern of, like, how a lot of these the leadership is in the government right now. Like, Ryan Zinke, for example, he spent, like, $40,000 on helicopter rides in Nevada. And then he just said, oh, I was looking at wildfire. Like, he put it to the wildfire prevention thing. And when pressed about it, he's like, yeah, I was just kind of flying around Nevada, like on a helicopter tour.
Jesus.
So that was one thing. God. And of many. Obviously, Scott Pruitt of the EPA, he was in the spotlight because he was only taking like first and business class everywhere he goes, because he was like, well, it's actually safer for me because when I sit in coach, everybody's rude to me. Yo, then maybe fucking stop denying climate change, yeah. asshole. Like, there's a reason why everyone's rude to you because you are a fucking – you're on the wrong side of everything.
It's insane that the government is staffed with the dumbest group of criminals yeah. and morons. Like, it's not even I mean, I'm super glad that Steve Bannon is out. But he was someone that was like, you're like a nefarious and cruel person with an agenda. The rest of them are just like dumb cronies and crooks. They're not even – They don't even have a plan to like dismantle the country or anything. Right. Just like I like expensive dining room yeah. sets and like yeah I'm really underwater on this real estate deal, so I just need like $20,000 to keep me going, man. Yeah. Just fucking coast on it.
Come
like,
on, China, put down on this building, man. I'll help y'all out. Yeah, so it's very inept, and guys, look, this is just where our government's headed. So I guess on that note, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we are back, and it seems like the NRA is still the very hot topic this week. This morning, Dick's Sporting Goods, the owner basically announced that they will no longer be selling assault-style rifles at Dick's Sporting Goods, which is, you know, very commendable because we don't have a government that is going to do that yeah. at this point. Yeah. And it seems like now private businesses are taking it on their own to be like, well, if you're not going to do it, then I can already see that this is not a good thing, so we will – cease to sell them. Yeah. And it's interesting to think about because it looks like, I don't know, like I feel like culture might be moving faster than the government is in a way, like where the government has just sat on their hands and now just private business is like, okay, well, if y'all not going to do it, then we'll fucking do it.
Yeah.
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 I feel like corporate America is having a lot of influence. I mean, obviously has a lot of influence in a lot of ways, but like even recently, Georgia passed a law and then Disney was like, we're not going to do business with you since you passed that.
Yeah.
Law.
It's
which law?
It was, I think, oh, I'm trying to remember exactly, but I believe
it was one
like
of the gay marriage
LGBT,
ones.
It was an LGBT.
Recently?
Like, yeah, it was like against LGBTQ.
Oh, there. Well, I know last week, or maybe this week, they did pass a bill in the state Senate in Georgia that made it like very hard for LGBT couples to adopt.
Yeah.
Is that the bill you're talking about?
I think that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And I know, yeah, because a lot of studios and networks do shoot in Georgia. That has always been a thing. Like, I think also when a few years ago, when they had a few very aggressive anti-LGBT laws on the books, like Coca-Cola and a few other people were like, yo, we will fucking cease to do business here. And they're like, okay.
Yeah. This is a crazy change to see in my lifetime because we grew up and it wasn't this. Corporations were just corporations. And now it's not even about a corporation is like being political. They're being partisan now. Like
right.
you're picking sides and like companies have to really focus on like, what do we stand for? Because that this is not even just about like consumers who are going to buy your product or go to your store or whatever. It's about like employee retention and hiring. Like, I'm not going to work for a company that is openly supporting NRA or openly trying right. to like not make cakes for gay weddings. These are the companies that I'm going out for.
Yeah,
is
Bakers.
To make cakes?
Yeah. but it's crazy. The companies, all of them, have to like take a side. This CEO of Axios, Jim Vandehei, said, "Think of your brand as a political candidate. You need to be hyper aware of how you're seen by your core constituencies and by the broader public." That was just not a thing when we were growing up.
No,
and now
not at all.
I can look at like every corporation that I see and be like, ah, Papa John's. They don't like when football players
exercise their First Amendment right.
protest. Yeah. So like, fuck Papa John's forever. Mm-hmm. And just like how aware we all are and how aware yeah. the companies need to be is a really fascinating shift that like I'm always hesitant these days to be like, I think this is a good thing.
Right.
Because why would it be?
Right. Well, because I know some people, if you're more cynical about the decision by Dick's, it's like, well, look, they're just doing that because like it's popular or whatever. And frankly, I don't give a fuck what their motivation is. If you're doing that, then great. I don't like
yeah.
if you're going to cease to sell it, you can sit back and pretend like, well, you are, you know, for selling assault rifles, but you're effectively not. At the very least, it's a good decision. I know in the aftermath of Sandy Hook, they also said that they would stop selling assault rifles. And then later on, they did. But I think that was in their other stores that they own, like their hunting and fishing mm-hmm. specific stores. But again, I think it's a great move that now corporations, I think, also realize that because consumers are more savvy now that, you know, the culture wars have begun. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and this is kind of like indicative of that, of like now they're saying like, and you can just tell, for example, because Dick's did something like this and earlier in the week, Delta canceled their, discount. Yeah. To NRA members to go to their, annual convention. That it's got a lot of people in their feelings. And so what's interesting is this, you really are seeing this sort of culture war thing. It's very clear because the lieutenant governor of Georgia was saying, like, why are they punishing conservatives? And that seemed to be a sort of like the talking point that everybody in the Georgia GOP is using, because earlier, I think yesterday or this morning, one of the state senators from Georgia went on CNN to push a weird like conspiracy theory that well, Delta, you know, they give discounts to Planned Parenthood, and we're not really sure where he got that because it's just a fucking talking point. Anyway, listen
to this. Do we have a clip?
I think we have a clip.
Delta has said, you know what, we had this agreement where NRA members would get a discount, and even though we support Second Amendment rights, we're not now going to honor that discount. I mean, what's your impression of that?
Well, again, why did they come out and do that Saturday? I mean, they could have waited for a couple more days, maybe another week or so, so Casey could have pushed this bill through. But they decided to come out and do it Saturday. And that energized their base. Like you said, it energized those people that love our country, that love our Constitution, and love our Second Amendment right. And if they're going to pull the discount for NRA members, why not pull it for Planned Parenthood or some of the left organizations out there?
Well, wait. Where's the discount dealt? You're saying... Where are you getting that? The Delta gives a discount to Planned Parenthood members.
Well, again, they're out there giving discounts to other liberal-leaning organizations.
Answer the question.
Where are you getting that? I just need to be clear on this because you just indicated that they give discounts to Planned Parenthood members. I haven't seen that anywhere. I've seen allegations of that in right-wing blogs. I've been able to find no verification of that. We have people looking at that. Where are you getting that?
I was in a caucus meeting yesterday morning where the governor of Georgia was in there trying to convince us all, basically threatening us that if we don't pass this, that the things are going to be taken out of the budget, that if we don't do this, again, there's going to be consequences. Yeah. And other senators, as well as myself, we looked it up on Google, and I apologize, I don't know the exact source right now, but my campaign can get it to you if you need to.
Yeah. Wow, I looked it up on Google.
Well, I Googled fun potato.
And you did find some fun shit, to be fair.
That's a fun clip to laugh at that cheese dick who doesn't know what he's talking about, and the rest of the clip is fun. Like, the reporter doesn't let up, which I love, but it's still separate from how much I'm enjoying this guy being an idiot. It's a really – Georgia's in a really weird place right now where Delta is like a bunch of kids died again in a school, so we no longer support the NRA. And in a very like small way. It's not even like if you're an NRA, you can't fly Delta, you're banned. No. It's just – no, we're just not giving you discounts. And then the Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle is going to kill any tax legislation that is going to help Delta. They're now financially threatening Delta on behalf of – The NRA, essentially, which is, and like his quote about it was really troubling. He says, corporations cannot attack conservatives and expect us to not fight back, is now, it's conservatives versus Delta, I guess, is what, like.
It's the NRA versus
It's the NRA,
Delta,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And just like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around how we're actually framing these arguments anymore.
It's not a conservative thing. This is someone who probably has his eyes on a gubernatorial election campaign, and he's out there with his chest out because he knows that's the base that'll probably elect him if he wants to run for governor. So it's all these optics in the name of like who their sort of corporate benefactors are. And in this case, it would be the gun industry.
Yeah. And it's bonkers because like Delta is one of the, I think the biggest employer in Atlanta. And,
in the state of Georgia, I think.
And now the governor is threatening. So that's the choice that Delta needs to make is I have to support the NRA or I run the risk that the government is going to kill legislation that helps me and helps me to more employees.
The thing that you're stating was a jet fuel tax, which is already kind of like, all right. You know, a little. You can look at that as being not totally necessary. Yeah. That they need a break on their jet fuel, because like yesterday we talked about too. After the GOP tax bill that was voted in December, they like made $150 million instantly in like the fourth quarter of 2017. Mm-hmm. So $50 million, like, and I think that's where Delta's like, all right, whatever. And initially, I think Delta even suggested to the state that they're like, no, we don't really like. That's cool, but we also don't mind like that to help build the roads better, like for infrastructure. Yeah. You don't have to give us. Yeah. Like, why don't y'all? So Yeah.
But it's about a discount.
Yeah.
It's about a discount.
Right.
Like, yeah. I would, at first when they were like a Planned Parenthood discount, I was like, I wish I knew about this discount.
Yeah. And Planned Parenthood had to come out there like, yeah, we don't do business with corporations. Like, yeah. We're just here doing what's right.
Yeah.
And like, we don't need to incentivize that with like corporate discounts to anyone.
But yeah. It's about a discount. Like, sorry, they get to give their discounts where they want to give their discounts.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And it's, you're not, again, we said this yesterday, it's not your God-given right for a fucking discount.
Right.
So, you know, choose wisely. And I guess
it's in the Second Amendment.
Right, exactly.
The discount on flights. That's,
yeah.
That's what we fought for.
So along with that, too, like there's also been a big push for, you know, a lot of people have been calling on, you know, obviously FedEx, like people like companies like FedEx who are still doing business with NRA to, you know, maybe reevaluate their relationship with their discounts with the NRA. And FedEx is like, nah, fuck that.
Yeah.
But also Apple, Amazon, Roku, and like other big tech companies, they're under a little bit of a stress because a lot of people are saying, look, you guys host NRA TV on your streaming services. Like you can get on Apple TV, Fire TV, YouTube, Roku, like fucking anything, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just nonstop. Like old angry white dudes complaining about immigrants and how the liberals are going to take our guns and it's going to be Holocaust 2.0, which is like one of their favorite talking points, which is like, oh, what happened with the Jews? Because they didn't have guns. It's like, okay. So now a lot of companies like Roku and them, they're saying, look, we don't want to censor anyone's viewpoints because we don't have a quote unquote commercial relationship with the NRA and they don't want to do anything that – they don't want to censor viewpoints. They only would censor hate speech and misleading content. Okay, so let's believe that that's the case, that the NRA TV is completely free of hate speech or misleading content. Hmm. Do you guys want to bet if the NRA is the most objective form of entertainment about the Second Amendment out there? Just wild stab at it.
Yeah.
Carmen, what do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a head scratcher. Uh-huh. Daniel?
As someone who has never seen NRA TV or, in fact, heard about it until this news story, I fully believe them to be misleading liars.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just kind of go down this a little bit. I mean, if you've ever watched it, this thing, obviously, we've seen Dana Loesch, the spokeswoman, and the kind of fiery shit that she says. But we basically know that NRA TV isn't just like an informative look at hunting culture or firing ranges. It's now like a full-on propaganda machine for the far right. And if you look, a lot of their programming does violate the terms that these companies are saying. So, for example, exactly. Like, you know, like one of the things is they always liken like liberalism to terrorism. So in 2016, this correspondent on NRA TV, Chuck Holton, he compared liberals to ISIS because they, quote, they both hate America and are for open borders. And before the show's like the host cut him off. He's like, yeah, I don't want to go there. Because he could even feel like, oh, let's try and pretend we're not a total fucking, you know, propaganda machine. And also even like with the Women's March, like the host like actually called feminists, quote, whiny, out of touch children, you know, and looked into camera and said they were marching because they hate you, the viewer.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
like that. I don't know. Is that misleading?
Well, I mean, it's so far I'm not seeing anything false. Carmen, you and I were both at the Women's March, and
you were.
We did it because we hated
the people
whoever
watch NRA TV.
Was watching NRA TV.
Yeah, not the
and like,
leadership in the country, specifically NRA TV viewers.
Liberals being the same as ISIS. Like anytime ISIS has done some terrible act, I've been like, ugh, but I get it.
Right. And also, how about hate speech? Right, because they're completely free of hate speech, from what I understand, at least from what I think. I don't know what hate speech is.
Would you call it love speech? Instead?
Yeah, maybe. But our favorite Dana Loesch, she went on a little bit of some transphobic BS rant about Chelsea Manning. Was just saying, "quote I'm not going to suddenly pretend that this individual who's pretending to be a woman is a part of my sisterhood. He went through maturity and puberty as a male. Just because you get some boobs and you put some red lipstick on, poorly applied, and a very poor smoky eye, bad dye job, that don't make you a chick." She literally said, that don't make you a chick.
Dana Loesch has just been like a trash gift that won't stop. Like,
yeah.
When I saw her on TV last week, was like my first exposure to her was when she was talking with the survivors of the shooting and making a complete ass of herself.
Oh my God.
It takes like 20 minutes of Twitter searching to be like, oh man, all of her opinions are wrong.
Oh,
she
yeah.
is just like a full-blown garbage person who's been saying ignorant shit since Twitter
Since time immemorial.
Yeah,
yeah. No, really. And then, like, even, like, those first NRA TV ads that came out where she was basically, like, calling for like armed conflict with like liberals, essentially, where it's like they will perish in the political fires. Oh, it's like, whoa, that's cool.
Also, like, I don't get the. She was like, her lipstick was applied poorly. I was like, oh, jeez. Yeah.
Like, there are so many. It's like a exponentially problematic on so many
like,
different layers.
Please stop. You are bad at it. Oh.
You don't have one good thought in that head. And like, obviously, with misleading content in 2014, they falsely claimed that, you know, data was being collected so the government could confiscate your guns. And also, you know, compared gun control to Jewish persecution in Ukraine during the Holocaust, as well as Jim Crow laws, because the gun owners are so oppressed. In 2014, yes, they said that, yeah, it was about the data specifically, they would confiscate your weapons. And also, another great thing was, of course, recently with the Parkland shooting, someone basically compared it to Benghazi? That's a very interesting thing. And this is the quote. You know, I can't help draw comparisons to Benghazi. Now, that was a terrorist attack. And you could make the argument that this guy was a terrorist. No, he was a Nazi, probably, based on some evidence that came out that I think he had swastikas on the magazines of his gun. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the quote. But terrorist is sexier because that usually evokes someone that is not white in someone's head. Anyway, so the terrorist, when he rained down on that school, you had so many warnings, Chris. You and the men that you fought with over there warned about Benghazi over and over again that there were threats and there were security flaws and issues there. Now we see that there were warnings over and over again. We as Americans, I'm sad to say, we're not learning lessons from other events that we could have learned, whether it was Benghazi or any other school shooting. This school wasn't ready and they should have been.
There's never been a time in my life where I even thought the phrase, you know, I can't help but draw comparisons to Benghazi. Right, right. Everywhere I look, I'm just like, this doesn't remind me of Benghazi.
At all. But do you understand what the dynamics for that? Anyway, rather than the real hot right-wing talking point that they love Benghazi. Oh, my God. If you can compare Benghazi to anything, that gets them. Ooh,
they love it. They
so
just
excited.
Like saying it because they know that
it's fun to
gets
say.
Everyone's hackles up.
Benghazi. It's fun. Just say it. Yeah. Benghazi.
Yeah. Good mouthfeel.
Good mouthfeel. Great mouthfeel. So, yeah. Again, this is just – it's really just not an issue of this political divide between gun owners and gun control advocates anymore. Like, this channel is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And they just talk about shit that really has nothing to do with guns and just pushing a very dangerous message to people that is not useful. Okay.
And consumers are trying to get it off. They're putting pressure on Amazon and YouTube and all that to get rid of it. That's – good.
Yeah, so I think people at the very least, look, we're not going to be able to boycott like Amazon. No. I think because people just, let's be real, most people are so dependent on Amazon Prime and things like that that even if you said, well, then I'm going to go to Walmart, you're like, well, they sell a ton of guns too.
Yeah.
And also Walmart is like destroying middle America anyway, let's be real. So it's hard to like effectively, you know, how do we boycott in this age is a very interesting subject to talk about because we don't know. What, like, do we, I think the most we can do is at this point with some of these companies, put enough pressure on them to get them to act because clearly government won't do that either.
We do put pressure with our wallets, I will say.
We
do stop paying.
Like Uber definitely felt it, like with the travel ban shit when they came through to try and undercut the taxis and shit like that. So, yes, I think it's very – like there is a power that consumers have and it'd be weird that this somehow could be like a consumer-led revolution.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting responsibility and interesting the things that – I feel like I need to know about companies now that I'm going to just like because every company is taking a stand on different things because you can't be FedEx. You can't be silent. You need to pick something and like show what your company stands for. But it's still – I'm not really looking forward to a future where I walk into an establishment like, yo, Arby's, the fuck you think about climate change?
Yeah,
right. And they're like, oh, we believe it's real and man-made. Okay. I'm going to get one of your sandwiches then.
Good. I guess I'll have a big Montana.
You're on my list.
Yeah. Actually, no. Upgrade me to a meat mountain.
Yeah.
Have you had the meat mountain?
I have not had the meat mountain.
Have you heard of the meat mountain?
I have not heard of the meat mountain.
The meat mountain is like every meat that they have at Arby's and they put it in one sandwich. It's disgusting. And it's that's probably the cause of all of our climate change. Let's be real because raising beef is very dangerous for the environment. Okay, cool.
I love the way you add it. For the environment.
For the environment. Okay, cool. Let's keep this moving. All right, with that, let's take a quick break and we will be right back. And we are back. And to take us out, let's talk about some light stuff really quick. There was an article in Vanity Fair with Babs herself, Barbra Streisand, where she was basically did like a really cool interview. But the thing that caught everyone's attention was the fact that she has two dogs that were clones. Or are clones of her beloved Coton de Tulier, Samantha, who died in 2017, very tragically, because dogs die.
That was so well pronounced. Yeah. Samantha.
Samantha. Thank you so much. Yeah. Samantha, she's our favorite Sex in the City character. Oh, no. It's our favorite. Anyway, that's a complete tangent I went on because we were laughing about that last week. Anyway, so, yes, Samantha died tragically in 2017. But you know what? When you got fucking money, you don't have to accept death, okay? All you gotta have is $50,000 and you can fucking do a Xerox of a fucking dog. And so basically with like cells from the dog's stomach and mouth, she was able to create two clones at $50,000 apiece. And they're just straight up living clone dogs that she has of her beloved old dog.
I love that it's not even one clone. It's two clones. It's like, I beat death twice.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, fuck you. Right, just fuck
like,
you twice.
Like daring God. Like, are you going to take him away from me? God? Okay. Well, guess what? Yeah. Two. You want to see how now far what? This goes? What do we learn, God?
Yeah. And watch until they like have some really bizarre health issues down the road. But yeah, clone dogs are so weird. I used to work, like one of the clients at our lobbying firm was a very wealthy billionaire. And he had a clone dog he used to walk around with. And like, I'm pretty sure, I don't want to say that he sort of helped, like he did this very early on and was a very big funder of like cloning dogs, or at least getting that technology to where it is. But his whole thing was too, he loved this dog so much. He cloned many of them and like put them in foster homes, like group homes, because he was like, these would be great therapy dogs. Whoa. Which is a good, I think is an interesting use of your money to do that. Now, $50,000 just to make your puppy come back to life. I mean, look, that's your prerogative. Do what you want with your money. But I think, I don't know.
I don't like that for a variety of reasons. Probably like the silliest is that I don't think the dog wants that, which I'm anthropomorphizing a dog, right. Giving it a personality. But like, I think about my own sweet beloved Jackson, my dog, and he wouldn't like that. I because he wouldn't know, oh, that's me. That's another me. That's my consciousness. He would just resent the idea of me getting close with another dog that's
even if it is
not
him.
Right, even if it is him.
Or him genetically.
Right. It's also like the article is so bonkers because she says she's going to wait for her two dogs to grow up to see if they have Samantha's brown eyes and her seriousness. And in my head, I'm like, or else what, Barbara? Or like, what if they're not the exact dog that you fell in love with, Barbara?
Then I'm going to drop another $50K for a good one.
Go back to the cloning doctor and be like, get it right this time.
Yeah, right.
$60K, okay?
She's like, sang my heart out for this.
Yeah, right, exactly. What was her big hit?
Funny Girl?
The Way We Were, too?
Yeah.
Or a version
definitely
of her,
a rendition of it.
A rendition of it. I'm just picturing her like singing that to her dogs and them not responding in the way she wants. And she's like, no, these dogs are fucked.
Yeah.
Usually when I sing that, they love it. So these are flawed. You get a warranty, do you think, with a clone dog?
They will be different dogs, right? Because they'll be raised differently.
It's environmental.
It's like being a twin, right?
Right.
That's the whole...
But I'm sure there has some overlap. Because even like separated... Aren't there like stories about separated identical twins at birth who even like once they meet, they still do have many similar things about them?
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be making this up based on a movie I saw.
And I'm just sort of an agreeable person, why I'm nodding and saying, yes, it's true. I read that also.
Thank you. This is a new podcast called Dangerous Misinformation with Miles and Hayden and Carmen, brought to you live. But yeah, $50,000. I mean, guys, look, if you have that kind of money, maybe fucking do something better for humanity than that. I mean, if you really have that kind of money, just throw in a dog.
And I'm sure she does a lot of great things for humanity. Like, I'm sure she's great. I'm sure she donates money. I'm sure she helps out and is like, I'm Barbara fucking Streisand. Yeah. I want the dog that I had when I was younger, and I am allowed to do that.
Beware, because I'm sure within hours someone will tweet about like, oh, you know, Barbara Streisand is wildly problematic.
Yeah.
I
only know her from Meet the Fockers, so I'm not too attached to her. I can boycott that movie.
I only know her from the Netflix billboard that was outside of our office for months. another story I want to talk about, since we're all millennials, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I
checked recently and the range is much bigger than I anticipated.
Yeah. Because I think technically Jack is a millennial as well.
Yeah.
He does not like that. No. but we are millennials and we embrace that because who gives a fuck what the title is? We're human beings. But there was recently a study by this company called Comet. They do like financial services. In this study, there was an area with these 20 to 36 year olds that said 41% said they would end a relationship for a promotion. They also found that almost a third said that they would end a relationship for a raise. So Like, on average, they said the amount was about $36,000 would convince them enough to putting off a relationship.
Wow. Mm. Well, I mean, we have been in the worst economy ever. I feel like we're just like, please just pay me.
Yeah.
Right.
It's strange to do a study with just single people and
yeah, whose motivation they're right. Like, whatever.
Would you rather have money or this dim hypothetical idea of a relationship that you don't really, like, you're not actually invested in, so you don't have,
right.
You don't have any of those feelings. It's like, yeah, I mean, I'm lonely and poor right now.
Yeah.
Like it would be better to be lonely with money.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, I guess there's always Tinder.
Yeah,
right. It's true. Like, in terms of the economy, like, this generation has grown up with a lot of economic uncertainty. We didn't grow up when our parents grew up when there was, like, a middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's just haves and have-nots. And that's very frightening, I think. And when it sort of changes our worldview, right? Because now millennials are much more open to putting off marriage and having children because we're like, nah, we gotta get ours.
Yeah.
And I guess part of that is getting that paycheck. So I guess for $36,000, would you break up a relationship, Carmen?
Well, I'm not in one, so my hypothetical person.
Hypothetical.
I mean, he's not my dream man because I can't think of him right now.
Oh, wow. Who's your dream man?
Who's my dream
celebrity
man?
Celebrity or otherwise?
He just doesn't even exist.
Oh, wow. Well, let's pretend he does exist, that you can't even
Carmen, you've engaged in hypotheticals before.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, if I'm saying I'm with somebody who's like the love of my life, no. But if it's like a relationship I'm not that involved in, who's also paying me to break up with somebody?
That's the weird thing
about this study.
They're not paying you to break up with them. It would just be like, you already have a job and you're in a relationship. If you take this promotion that gives you $36,000 extra, then
I have to break up with them?
Yeah,
this is an abusive job.
Yeah, that's true. Very manipulative boss. I think that's kind of sexual harassment. I'm just like, look, Carmen, I will give you this raise, but you need to break up with your boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, to me, that's like, this is an unrealistic question because it's so ridiculous. And to me, I feel like it's trying to be like, see, millennials
heartless.
Don't care about people.
Yeah. I'm really interested in knowing what the function of the study, like how this survey was presented to them. Because if it's just like this, I don't know what kind of real evidence you're generating aside from like giving people a choice between money and a relationship.
Yeah. There will never be a boss that is like, this position is perfect for a single woman.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Or a single man. Yeah.
This is not the 50s anymore. You don't have to be like, my secretary needs to be single.
She can't be distracted with a family.
The question should be, why are we asking people to decide for a job?
Yeah.
Right. And also, like, what is the value in forcing a study right now that is like, would millennials rather have jobs or love? It's like, I mean, like either. Come
because
on.
Because
millennials are the great trigger word for baby boomers on the internet to read about and just go, pfft. Anyway, Anna, you want to jump in?
Yeah, may I add something? I just read this article.
You're like, I just broke up with my boyfriend for $36,000.
I don't like this because I feel like if you chose money over a relationship, then that relationship didn't necessarily mean that much to you to begin with. So I almost feel like it's like a non-survey. Like,
that's like being like, hey, would you want to have a chocolate cake or like some money?
A gun.
And I'm like, well, I guess I'll take the money because I don't want chocolate cake right now.
Yeah, right. It's, again, look.
Then I would use the money to buy cake later.
See,
no law that says I can't.
You found a flaw in the matrix.
Or in this case, be well established and feel like
good
about my life so that I can meet a real person instead of a hypothetical one.
I feel like if I had a lot more money, I would just be like more comfortable and I would take better care of myself and then love would follow.
But have you ever been in a position where you've thought about opportunity being in another city and being in a relationship and then weighed like, oh, like, would I move for a job in another city that affords me more opportunity or the possibility of more money in that context? Not to even – aside from this study, just in general.
Not this exact thing, but I – certainly where I went to college was based on proximity to a person that I was interested in.
Uh-huh.
And not in like a – I'm going to – how I can
– Were y'all dating?
No.
So we were creeping from, you said, I'm going to go to this school because I'm interested in this.
Yeah, it was like a really high school where I could like watch from above. it was deciding between a much better school in New York or a school in Jersey where I could be closer to this person that we thought things were going to happen, but they didn't. So I imagine that I would probably turn down a well-paying job for a person if the well-paying job made me move
far away. You all about the love. Fuck money.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, like, what about long distance? Like, how long is this job going to last for?
Yeah.
Also, there's the question of, like, are you going to, like, is the person that you either go, like, say, no, I'm not going to take that job that I really, really want. Is there going to be, like, tension now because of that? Like, there are so many what ifs to ask. It's really hard to answer.
God, love, huh? We don't, what do we know about love? I'm just all about that paper, man.
Yeah.
That almighty dollar sign. You know, when I go to bed, I cuddle with all my money.
Yeah.
And I don't even have none.
So that one money.
My one money. Yep. We talked about this yesterday. I'm trying to get two money, but right now I just have one money. All right. So with that, Carmen, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you for having me.
I mean, God. You guys, it's been a really hard week, you know, because Jack is gone.
You're doing such a great job, by the way.
I'm a nervous wreck every day.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm drinking too much coffee, and I'm sweating a lot. It's also diuretic, so I've been urinating a lot. So I'm going through a lot. But thank you so much.
I feel like this is like that week where people are like, hey, do you want to come over to her house and we've made casserole? Or like they bring you casserole.
Right. Because I just chose money over love, but I'm still feeling bad about that.
I also feel like you're filling in for Jack, so drinking too much caffeine and sweating a lot, you're doing the right thing.
I'm honoring Jack. You hear that, Jack? We're honoring you. And okay, well, anyway, Carmen, please tell people where they can find you, find more about you, find your work, because you're a very talented person. Oh. I think if people don't already know, I know there are many people who are very familiar with you, as I saw when I was putting, just so you know, I was doing IG live streaming earlier, and there are people going, is that Carmen too? Carmen too? Carmen and Dan? They were freaking out. So for the people who don't know, let them know.
I thought they were just freaking out about my overalls. well, that's good to know. My Twitter is at CarmenJeanCheeses. And if you want to look at my work, I usually just keep it all in one place on my website, which is CarmenAngelica.com.
Boom.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Daniel.
Yes.
Thank you so much for guest hosting.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's
you made
really
it very
great.
Easy for me. It's comforting to have another person named O'Brien sitting across from me.
I want you to know how hard I worked on the yah that you do in the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
I can't get that purr. You have
that
a purr
vocal fry?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a yah.
Yeah, I like that.
You know,
yeah.
You got to. I've been working on it for a long time. But yeah, Daniel, tell people where they can find you, support you, love you, show you love.
You can find me on Twitter at @DOB_INC and look for me nowhere else because Twitter is the public thing and you can do that and just leave me alone the rest of my life.
You have Instagram?
I have Instagram, but like it's not for you.
Is it private?
No, it's not private because I'm weird. But
oh, okay.
Just like. You can follow if you want, but I don't.
That's so weird that you have one, then you're like,
want you to.
My Twitter that's also, or my Instagram that's also public is not for you.
Yeah.
And it's not private either, so. Okay.
You can also, do it. Yeah, right,
I guess.
You can also find me at, there's a new website from Macaulay Culkin called bunnyears.com. We are officially launching on Friday, but we had a soft launch Monday, so you can find some stuff by me and some other writers that you probably know, like Tom Ryman and David Christopher Bell and Sandra Sorensen and some others that I'm not mentioning yet. But yeah, it's a comedy website and doing some freelance stuff for them. And check out Macaulay's performance appearance on The Tonight Show this Friday. He'll be talking about the new website.
Nice. Ooh. And were you doing a podcast with them? Are they doing a podcast too?
Oh yeah, Bunny Ears is also doing a podcast. Yeah. I'm going to be on it in May. We recorded a couple weeks ago. And
yeah, I'm helping you promo stuff.
Thanks,
he's forgetting
man. Thanks.
Yeah, because I saw you on the Twitter. I was like, oh shit, okay.
Yeah.
Guys, what about Anna Hosnier? Tell me about you. Where can people find you? Wow, that squeaky mic.
Sorry, well. I pushed the mic away from me. Aww. You can find me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh. You can listen to my podcast, Ethnically Ambiguous, and I hang out with Miles at the office on his Instagram Live.
What's some other podcasts?
Oh, if you are a Bachelor fan like I am, who's excited for this finale? Who's he going to pick?
Hey, turn her mic down, please.
What is he hiding? What does he do? No spoilers, please. Listen to my podcast I produce that's hosted by Arden Marine and Aaron Foley called Will You Accept This Rose?
They're not on How Stuff Works, but we show them love.
We're not on How Stuff Works. We're on Nerdist.
Actually, you know what? Just bleep all this out.
But we're going independent. And we're about to have some fun, baby.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, shout out to you. Shout out to Arden. And guys, if you're looking for me, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I've been going live recently. So if you really want to see some fun shit, follow me on Instagram too, at Miles of Gray. If you're looking for the show, The Daily Zeitgeist, we are on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're on Instagram at The Daily Zeitgeist. We're on Facebook. We got a fan page. You know how to find that. And also we have a website http://www.dailyzeitgeist.com www.dailyzeitgeist.com.
Yeah.
Yes, I've remembered that. Yes, now that is our website, and you can go there for all of our episodes and links to our footnotes. Oh, shit, damn. Thank you, my man. You can get it all there. We got links to everything that we're talking about because we're not fucking lying, okay? So stop asking me where I found this out. Just go to the website. To take us out, I just want to give people a little bit of history. I want to drop some science on people. Blue Note Records, a great jazz label, they had many great artists that gave us the samples that a lot of hip-hop is built on. This one today, because it's the West Side, I want to do The Edge by David McCallum. I'm not even going to tell you what Dr. Dre song this was sampled in, even though I just looked it up. It's the next episode. But look up this song. Keep this one. It's called The Edge by David McCallum. It's just some, like, real shit, you know, and you can flex on your friends and be like, oh, this is the sample that Dr. Dre used. So enjoy that. And if you guys love us, peep in tomorrow, because it's Daily Show. All right, later.